Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snack Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone! Hit well. Deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is the official Covering the Corner podcast, episode 193. I am your host, Matt Lyons, and in this week's episode, we'll have some meatballs, some tidbits of information that the Guardians did over the last week. Talk about Aaron Civale hitting the injured list with a strained wrist, what that means for the Guardians going forward, and for Aaron Civale. Talk about the fact that Juan Soto has rejected another Nationals offer, and he'd be up for being traded, and the Nationals are considering trading him. Maybe the Guardians shouldn't do that? Maybe they shouldn't? I don't talk about that. Look at the midseason standing stats, because we are now at the All-Star game, All-Star break. Look at how the Guardians did in the first half, some surprises we've had, what we're looking forward to in the second half, maybe a bold prediction or two. And I think it's always worth looking at Nolan Jones just for... It doesn't matter why. He's here. We'll look at him again. He was, again, very good, and he was almost going to start against a lefty until rain ruined it. So we'll look at Nolan Jones, how he's been the first couple weeks. Joining me for all that and more, another Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you for asking. I appreciate it.
That's good. Happy to have you. Are you doing your quizzes?
Yeah, finding out
if you have 140 IQ by...
140 plus IQ, first of all. So, you know, and the answer is I do.
Is it like WRC plus where 40 is over average? I
don't know. It is actually. Thank you, Matthew, for knowing things. Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
well, see, that's because I have 140 IQ. So there you go.
Yeah, maybe 140, maybe 40. Who's to say?
It's all the same. It's a rounding error. That's all it is.
Yeah, exactly. It's numbers. Numbers are all made up by man anyway. The only thing I believe in is the stars themselves. I don't know what that means.
You know what I believe in, Merritt?
Yeah, the stars themselves.
Ooh. Meatballs, Merritt. I believe in our meatball section of the show where we talk about little things that happened about Guardians baseball, getting specific in it. I have a good one this week, so I'm going to go first because I like mine. In case you pick the same player, I don't want you to ruin it. So mine is about, we talked about him last week a tiny bit, is Tristan McKenzie.
Thank God.
and the whole time I was watching, not the whole time, but watching him dominate the Tigers.
Specifically Riley Green.
That poor Riley Green. I was thinking about the fact that you mentioned in the last podcast, like how high Tristan McKenzie's potential is compared to everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
He reached it. Career high 12 strikeouts, no runs last 21 innings. That comes after a 7-run game on June 27th. But since then, he's been great.
It's all from here.
Yeah, he just doesn't. So I was looking at his Baseball Savant page just to find something interesting about him. I think the most interesting thing is that he looks terrible on Baseball Savant. Like we all love looking at those little balls, Merritt. The ones that go back and forth, little lines. The red ones are good, blue ones are bad. He has a lot of blue ones. A
lot of blue. There's nothing. Surprising number of blue. It is very strange.
There's nothing above like a high percentile that would point to he's been great. Obviously, he wasn't great to start the year. He had a couple of really bad innings or bad games in June. But he's bounced back, and like overall his numbers are better than you'd think somebody who looks that terrible. He's a 3.20 ERA. You'd think if you get to that point, you'd have some sort of peripherals that point to being good. But the one thing I wanted to focus on him specifically, because even that start on what day was that? The 14th, on Thursday. There wasn't like a particular pitch I don't think was dominating. His curveball looked super good, maybe better than it's ever looked, but it still wasn't like the best pitch ever, unless you ask Riley Green, who just could not hit that thing to save his life. But I think it's his fastball was most interesting to me because after the game, Austin Hedges, a known guy with crazy eyeballs, Cleveland.com, they wrote about it. Basically, it was Jonathan Scope said that the pitch was invisible. And Hedges said he's got that thing going. It's deceptive in so many different ways. We can throw it wherever we want. And then I looked at MLB Film Room, which is an amazing little thing. You can literally just type Tristan McKenzie, Jonathan Scope, swinging strike, and see all of them. And you could watch, like, when he says they were invisible, he really felt that way. He was swinging at nothing every pitch. They were up in the zone. They were down in the zone. The pitches came in. He was nowhere close. It didn't look like he was focused on the ball. But then I wondered why that was. And I think it's something we talked about a lot last year because it was new and fun and exciting, but we haven't talked about it much this year, which is the spin-based movement versus observed movement of spin direction on balls. That was a new thing last year with Baseball Savant, where they laid out like a clock, like you rotate like fastballs, four seamers. Most of the ones are like noon, 1 o'clock, somewhere in there. Curveballs usually mirror that. And there's two things that you really want, two ways you can use that to your advantage. Like Shane Bieber, when he was at his best, he mirrored his fastball and curveball. The spins were opposite each other. So when they're coming at you, the split second you have, they look basically the same because the seams are spinning the same. They're spinning the opposite, but it's like a tire where it looks like it's spinning backwards kind of thing. McKenzie doesn't do that. His curveball's all over the place. His fastball's all over the place. But the one thing he does do is his fastball looks different compared to the spin base and observe movement. That's the other thing you want to do with him is if you can't mirror him, you want him to look different. What that basically means is what it looks like coming out of his hand is different than what it should look like, the way he's spinning it. It's just pure deception on the fastball. It doesn't show up really anywhere else in Baseball Savant because he doesn't have a high raw spin rate or anything like that. He doesn't get a ton of swing and misses on it. He just gets enough. But like you look at his fastball, the spin-based movement is like noon to one. And then the observed movement is almost all noon, a little bit of one. So it's he mixes those up. His slider especially does this too. It's a lot different. I don't know. It's just he's such a weird pitcher. I'm just trying to find anything that would point to the fact that he's been this dominant without having anything that looks dominant. I think part of it might be his long wingspan, the fact that he's so much closer to the mound when he throws. It adds a little bit of velocity, but I don't know. I think he's going to get to the end of the year and still have this weird Baseball Savant page that doesn't look great, but he's going to have better stats than we expect. He's basically going to be like Josh Tomlin in a way. I think he's going to be – his peripherals will never match what he does, but he's just going to have the right pitches at the right time, and he's going to get by with them.
I was thinking more like it was more like a Chris Young's kind of a situation, you know, the lanky, seemingly soft-throwing pitcher. He was on the
Royals, right?
You know, in the World Series, yeah. He got by because of just what you mentioned before, extension. Like he just had a bizarrely long stride and reach, I guess, which made it just, you know, like what Scope was saying about McKenzie's fastball, it just kind of blows up, even though he didn't throw 90, Young.
No, yeah, it's not raw velocity. It's not
at all. It's perceived. It's a perceived velocity, effectively. And I mean, you know, we like more and more and more, we're able to quantify so much. I mean, MLB and Baseball Savant has released that new thing about just bat speed. Like we're getting it down to that point. We're not even talking about exit velocity. It's the speed of, and not even the whole bat. Specifically the sweet spot, which is insane.
Yeah, they previewed that one graphic. Looks really cool. It's like a heat zone of where they could hit and where the sweet spot would have been based on their swing. It's ridiculous what we're getting.
I truly cannot wait for being able to look at home runs that were not on the sweet spot or whatever. I don't know. You're just like searching for that specific thing. But like, there's just some things, I think, because it's not really a thing you can measure. And maybe we'll be able to one day. But it just seems like it's so hard to measure perception. It's such a stupid thing. It sounds like such a dumb thing to say, but like you can't actually measure how the hitter is seeing the ball out of hand. Now, I mean, you know, the predominance of the Tigers is not good at hitting right now. They're not a good team in general. And he did dominate them. His curveball was working especially well. Like some days you just have a better feel for it, you know? And like, it's not a great pitch. It's,
it was just great that
year. It was negative five. His four seamer's been a killer the last couple of years. Last year, never mind. It was terrible. But he gets some good vertical movement on that one too. But that's what I've been wondering about, like him specifically, just because he has such a, I hate to say bizarre, but a unique body type, I suppose. And just like because he has that kind of over the top delivery, so it seems like it's probably coming from out of the sky anyway, and then. Like I said, his stride, like he's just all legs and arms, like his stride. I was trying to find, there's 6.8 feet is what his extension is on his fastball this year. I don't have anything to gauge that against. But yeah, I wonder if it's just a perception thing. And one day maybe we'll be able to better measurement. I think that's what we're trying to do with like things like extension, but like the combination of how he throws it, the fact that his hands are so just huge, like they're not so like big that they give a great like spin rate isn't bad on his fastball, 66th percentile, but like maybe just comes out of the hand strangely too, like he just hides it in there, so you can't pick up the spin correctly. Combining that with the things we can measure, just resulted in, again, it's not like he's consistently great. I think he got, you know, he's able to pitch against a bad team, and he took advantage of it, which is an issue I think we run into all the time with Cleveland pitchers, is at any given time, you know, 40% of the division is dreadful. So you wonder, what are we actually seeing as the actual valuable pitcher? You know what I mean? And then we end up with situations like when Bieber got shelled in the playoffs after winning a Cy Young, I think. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, we run into problems like that. So we're like, I don't know anything anymore.
I think that curveball he had on Thursday would have.
Oh my God. What a hammer. Yeah. I mean, it just was it's the perfect, like,
and it was late movement too. Like it tunneled well with the fastball.
It snapped. Like it was the kind of, it wasn't like the big looping silly one, like Greinke throws. It was like the kind of curveball that like Clayton Kershaw throws all the time. And is the reason he is a Hall of Famer. Kershaw's been throwing that since he was probably 15. McKenzie's, it's not that good, obviously, but I think that combined with the fact that he doesn't throw, he has a slightly below average fastball, but his slider's above average in velocity. And I like that he's just a three pitch pitcher right now. I'm glad he's not trying to incorporate like a changeup or something like that, like too radically. I think he threw 25 of them last year and none this year, which is, again, nice to see because he's still, I feel like he's been around forever. I feel like I've been talking about him for 15 years. But yeah, he's only 24, so.
Yeah, I mean, his rookie year, he threw him 10% of the time. Last year was 1.3%, and this year, like you said, none. So I think he's dropped that pitch, and it's probably for the best for
Weezer. Yeah, and we're kind of down the line. Like, I think he could probably develop a really good one. He's really good at locating his fastball. Just, don't work on it right now. And I think he could have a very neat changeup that would make him just an absolute weapon for years to come. So, yeah.
So what's your meaty meatball?
Well, I'm going to talk about a pitcher. His name is Shane Bieber. he didn't throw a shutout, but he threw a complete game last Tuesday against the White Sox. Gave up a run. Cleveland ended up winning. It was pretty cool. We were all very happy about it. A couple fun little facts about that.
This doesn't sound fun yet.
Actually, it is fun. It's kind of okay. Fun and stupid. My favorite kind of stat. 2022, it was his best pitched game by game score this year, 84. For those who know what game score is, it's a thing Bill James developed just to kind of roughly measure how quality a start was, right? He did it against the White Sox this year. Did you know that last year, his best game by game score was also against the White Sox? Isn't that crazy? He threw a shutout with a 91 game score, 9 innings, three hits, one walk, 11 strikeouts. Absolute killer.
Yeah, I think we're sleeping on the fact that he owns the White Sox. We always think it's the Tigers, other than the last one, obviously, but he dominates them all the time.
Do you know what his best pitch game in 2020 was pitched against?
Probably the White Sox.
Wrong, it was the Twins.
Oh, damn it.
So that was one neat thing. Also, and I looked into this, I thought I must be wrong, but I don't think I am. He had an 84 game score. That is his fifth best game by game score ever. And better than all but one game he pitched in the year he won the Cy Young in 2020.
You mean this last game was that high?
What's that?
You mean this last game was that high?
Yeah, 84. Oh, wow. His fifth best game score in his entire career. And which is what really blew my mind, it's on the side of that, was in 2020 when he was just absolutely unhittable. He did not even record his highest game score, which was a 94, I think, in 2019. So that was pretty neat. And also, he threw the least fastballs in a start in his entire career that game at 24.2% of his total pitches being fastballs.
That one's not as surprising. I think he's moving away from being a fastball pitcher.
Very much.
Which itself is surprising, but.
Do you know when his second least number of fastballs was?
Probably the start before that.
Yes. Do you know when the third least number of fastballs
the
was?
The one before that.
Wrong. It was on it was on August 15th, 2020. So
against the Twins, probably.
Against Detroit. And actually, he doesn't show up here again on the list as far as 2022 starts with the least fastballs until his 7th start. That was back in the 30th. So his last three starts have all been top 10, I'm not throwing any more fastballs starts, which we all see, obviously. You know, he's moving away because it's not a good fastball anymore. 91.2 miles per hour this past start, 91.3 the one before that. One before that was 91.3. So, he knows it doesn't work, so he's going to stop throwing it. I don't blame him. But anyway, a couple of fun little things about Shane Bieber. Hates the White Sox, had a great start, and doesn't throw fastballs. There you go.
Yeah, and it's, his sliders are just about to take over his fastballs. I think one or two more starts, if this is the trend. It's because like 34% sliders right now, 35 fastballs. So, but I think it's worth it because the fastball is not good anymore. Speaking of pitchers, I don't want to say speaking of fastballs that aren't good anymore, but Aaron Civale exited after one inning against the White Sox on also bad fastball Wednesday. Sore wrist said he had. It was weird because he came off. He didn't look like anything was wrong right away. They were trying to like watch the footage of him coming off. The last thing they noticed is he didn't really like high five with his pitching hand, so there wasn't really anything there. But turns out he had a sore wrist. I thought maybe there was a slight minor chance maybe he was traded, but it was just it's an injury. He's on the injured list. Obviously, with the All-Star break coming up, he's only going to miss one or two starts as long as it's just the minimum time on the IL. But it's unfortunate because I still want Aaron Civale to figure out whatever the hell he's doing. I think the only way he's going to figure it out is keep pitching. And I am the furthest possible way you could be from a doctor. But I was looking at just the pitches he threw compared to like old starts and his wrist, it was doing like, I don't care how athletic you are. If it snaps as hard as his was snapping on the follow through on his pitch, it's going to hurt. Like, cause I looked at some of his old starts. He holds his wrist like on the follow through of a pitch, but this start, it was just like snapping all the way back almost to his arm. So I don't know if it was like already sore and he couldn't hold it as much, or if for some reason he was snapping it and his mechanics were weird and that caused the sore wrist. I don't know if it did that or nothing, but either way, one inning against the White Sox was unfortunate because the game before that, he had seven innings against the Royals with six strikeouts. He looked good. I thought it would have been good for him to get two starts in a row. I mean, he didn't look great in the first inning against the White Sox, giving up two hits. But, yeah, they'll be at least without Aaron Civale. At minimum, probably one or two starts coming out of the break. Maybe more if the wrist is more than just a sore wrist.
I didn't realize how extreme of an outlier, but how wildly, oh, I don't know, even wildly, just his spin rates are way up this year. Like his fastball and curveball spin are 94th and 95th percentiles respectively, which is the highest of his career. Now obviously it's just percentiles, but even just raw spin rates, curveball is the highest it's been since ever, by a few RPMs, by 5 RPMs. The highest spread of that was 2019, and he didn't pitch that very much. But even his slider, highest of his career, his cutter is basically the highest of his career within, you know, rounding error effectively. Sinker, same thing. And like a lot of those pitches are, you know, wrist heavy, I guess. Like to get a cutter to spin, you kind of got to snap your wrist a little bit, you know, same thing with a slider to a degree.
And a curveball too. I
mean, and a curveball.
Anything you're going to spin real fast, it might hurt your wrist. I don't know
if that's... Yeah, so I mean, I wonder if this is because of that. You know what I mean? Like he's been struggling all year. I mean, he just hasn't been very good all year. He's went ERA in the sixes, just kind of getting knocked around a lot. His whip is substantially higher than it's ever been. He's giving up way too many hits. He's not getting any strikeouts. He's walking people at a very high rate. Like, he's only 12 starts in. He's already 15 walks. He walked, I guess that's about how many walks normally. But anyway.
it's not great still, but the curveballs looked good, but that's been about it. Like he's located the curveball. Well, there's some starts where it's not like the snapping curveball like Clayton Kershaw has or Tristan McKenzie had in the window, but they're big rainbow curveballs that still work when they work really well. And if you look where he's locating it, he's throwing the curveball really well, but it's just nothing is working.
Last year, his cutter was incredible. It was one of the best pitches in all of baseball, and it is his worst pitch this year. Like, by run values, we're talking about a +3 run value on it this year. It was -14 runs last year. His curveball, -5 last year. This year, it's just flat zero. It's getting, you know, they're getting hit hard. He's not getting the whiffs. Yeah, he's getting about the same. But anyway, he's getting less strikeouts on his cutter. So I don't know. Putting people away less than it ever has. I don't know. I mean, I'm wondering if he just has been trying to. Because this is how you get hurt as a pitcher, right? You get some little tweak and something doesn't work out, so you kind of compensate elsewhere. We were talking about someone else doing this last week, I think. But I wonder if that's just kind of what we're seeing here is something was wrong, so he tried to force an issue. And you talked about McKenzie with a whole lot of blue on his percentile thing. Like
Aaron Civale is
everything except spin rates and his walk rate, I guess.
Spin rates are incredible.
Are wild. They're like, I had no idea. That is like curve, same curve as 2019, basically. And other than that, yeah, it's all 80s and 70s and 80s. So,
yeah. And he's also dropped, like, not completely, but mostly that split finger. He was a big deal before last year that he was going to start using it. And I feel like that worked a little bit and then it didn't, but he's dropped that mostly, the split finger changeup that he did, which was fun learning about how he worked that, but now he barely uses it. So I don't know. Yeah, I think he's just a tinkerer. And I think injured before and being injured now is just going to slow him down and get back to figuring out what he needs to do to fix it. And I think he probably will, but he just needs to have the innings consistently to do it.
Well, even the split finger, again, if you ever watch a guy throw a split finger, it's, you know, you got to kind of jam in your fingers and snap your wrist really hard to throw it, because that's how you get more spin, that's how you get more drop, and that's how you make it work for you. So, again, I wonder if it all just kind of circles back to, you know, don't hear about wrist issues with pitchers very often. Whenever you hear forearm, it usually is a harbinger of Tommy John surgery, really, but it's I obviously Chris Sale got hit in the wrist like a day ago. So that probably, you know, hurt.
Oh, no, but he didn't get hit in the wrist. He got hit in the pinky. And
oh, did
that
he really?
Thing was broken, was yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, they showed it on the broadcast. It was, like, bent. It was gross. He got nailed in that thing, yeah.
But, yeah, so I wonder if this is just Aaron Civale overcompensating for some other injury issue and the same thing that's been holding him back all year. And he was hurt last year, too, I believe, right? Yeah. I wonder if this is just – I hope he can bounce back because he's proving more and more to not be – frontline starter, but if he's your third or fourth pitcher, you're doing pretty well. So, you know, and honestly, they need pitching. We're gonna get to it in a few minutes, I think. But, you know, I mean, they if their pitching can solidify some, they have a great shot at winning the division, because, you know, the Twins can hit, but their pitching is falling off, and the White Sox are eating themselves, I guess. I don't know. I can't tell what's going on with that team. They just beat the hell out of the Whites or the Twins, so who knows.
Yeah, they're up and down, but I know you have thoughts about this next one, so I'll let you go first. I'll just kind of lay out what happened with it. Juan Soto rejected another offer from the Nationals. 15 years, $440 million, which is insane to think about having that much money thrown at you and then declining it. I mean, I get it. He's Juan Soto. He's really good.
That's only $29 million a year. I
mean, yeah, and he's 23 years old, so This is obviously going to lock him in for, I mean, the weird thing is 14 years, like 37. He could still get another contract after that. It wouldn't be this big, but he can get a couple of years out of that if he's super good for a long time. But he's looking at a contract that's going to lock him up pretty much for his whole career. He's a free agent after 2025. And the Nationals, now that he's declined that, they're looking into trading. So I think the time of trading a guy like in the last half year is done. Like, they're not going to wait until 2025. He's already eligible next year. So this is the last year you get a half year of him really cheap, and then you're going to be paying a bunch of money for him. I don't know, Eric, should the Guardians be... Should they be ignoring this altogether and just enjoying their farm system? Thank you. I'm glad we agree.
Damn it. You got me there. Well, that's the thing about this is, like, what is, you know, it's like a similar issue to what's happening in the NBA with the whole Kevin Durant thing. He's an untradeable because there's not enough value. like, and if you do it, you have emptied your farm system. Like,
you're basically just what the Nationals are now. You're going to be screwed with Juan Soto. And then
yeah,
that's
like
it.
Yeah, because their farm system's trash. They don't have anything. Like, they just, it's like Dave Dombrowski came through or something. But I don't know. Listen, obviously, I've mentioned it several times on the podcast already, but I want it to happen. And now that they have a minority owner, it's a great way to get some goodwill. And even if not, like, you have Juan Soto for 2 years, and that rules. And obviously, they're not like just a Juan Soto away from a title. But I mean, I think they're a Juan Soto on a 10-year contract away from a title.
A title down the road, yeah.
You know, why not? And like, you know, I mean, obviously, yeah, $440 million. It's only $29 million a year, which isn't unconscionable. That's the amount of money I would need half of that to retire forever.
but terms of a baseball team, that's basically nothing. Like, if the Guardians had that every year, what would they? They'd still be on $100 million right now if they added that.
That's the thing. Like,
or barely over, maybe.
And like the way you build a team in the modern day, like you're supposed to have like three of those. A normal team, not the Guardians, have like three guys making between $25 and $35 million, and then everything else is either pre-arb guys, guys, you know, or whatever, pre-free agency guys, and then just filler around the edges. So then of course you have the Dodgers, I suppose. But like, if you put it in the context of what is a normal payroll for a team of what, I mean, at this point, I would say $130 million is a normal payroll for a baseball team that's actually trying to compete to win a championship. I even feel like that. I even feel like that's a low now.
I mean, that's where you're at. You should be at if you're like a, I don't want to say cost cutting, but a cutting edge team who's like still building through prospects. You got a couple
right,
of
like
guys.
A normal, like a non New York or Los Angeles team, right? Like a, I mean, White Sox, Cubs, Cardinals, that kind of Rangers, you know what I mean? Like that kind of scope of team, I suppose. Like, and like they all spend money when they, when it's time to spend money, you know, Orioles, whatever. Nationals, that's a great choice. But I don't know. I mean, I'd love for them to trade for him. I'd be very sad if he didn't get a better deal from the Nationals, because then I can't go and see him every time I want to go to a baseball game, which I would prefer. But I mean, it should. What bugs me is, like, I keep on reading, like, the Guardians couldn't afford it. I'm like, I thought they had this dope farm system. What do they have? What's there? So
I think if they could absolutely afford him in prospect capital, like their farm system is unreal. I will be
so right. I don't know what it would be, but like, give them six shortstops. They got enough. Just
see, I'm on the opposite end of you. If he makes it to free agency, I will be beating that drum. Pay him the damn money. Get him in here and have him. But I don't know. Like, if you don't think he's going to sign a $440 million deal, I think it's pretty clear he just wants to be a free agent and try it out in 2 years and get.
That's fair.
Maybe a 25-year-old. And then I wouldn't like emptying the farm system for 2 years, I don't think. Just because they have so many players who are, it's going to take so much. It's going to take like Daniel Espino, George Valera, all of your top guys just to get him for 2 years. I don't know. And even if he would guarantee to sign on later, I would almost just rather keep what you have. But if he hits a free agency, I will be absolutely hammering the Guardians to just spend the money and get him and win a World Series. But I think with what they have, I think they're better off over the next, maybe not the 2 years, because Juan Soto is amazing. But if they don't get Juan Soto for the long term, and it was only for 2 years, I think they'd be better off just keeping the prospects they have, because they have a lot of good ones coming. I think Valera is going to be an absolute star. I think Daniel Espino is going to be really good. If you trade one of those guys for like a Brian Reynolds or somebody else, sure. But I wouldn't want to trade everybody for Juan Soto, as good as and amazing as he is.
I know, but like, how many times you let down? Like, obviously,
I know. Yeah, prospects will always let you down, but I think the Guardians' process is just so good right now. Feels like it'd be bad to interrupt it.
We both agree. Like, we both want him, and it's in real life, it's a silly thing for me to be banging the drum about this. But at the same time, like, even though he's hitting 250, he has a 162 OPS plus.
That was like, ridiculous. Yeah, he's unreal.
It's insane, man. He has walked just in the last 2 years 224 times to 147 strikeouts. Like, he's so cool.
That little dance he does when he's ball, it's the best.
Like, they had a bobblehead of him doing the little dance. Like, it wasn't even his head that wobbled, it was his butt. It was great. Man, I don't know. Like, being more realistic, yeah, you know, someone like Brian Reynolds or something like that. Regardless of who we're talking about, like, Brian Reynolds would be a major injection of positivity in a way to the lineup. Juan Soto would be like a bolt from Zeus, and to have him for several years. And it's like, I'm immediately getting mad at the new minority owner for not pushing this. I hate you.
You're going to call
guy.
Him up. And why is he demanding you trade for Juan Soto and pay him $400?
Who is this man yelling at me? How did he find my house? Brett Juan Soto, you fucking jerk. Yeah.
Why is he wearing a 69 Merritt jersey? Who owns that? Hell? What is that?
Ryan Merritt? No, that can't be right. What's going on here?
Yeah, I don't know. He would be good, but I don't think they're obviously not going to do it. That's the overwhelming point here. But on the subject of the Guardians, clearly not needing Juan Soto. They are 46-44 at the midway point of the season. Two games back of the Twins, still a game ahead of the White Sox. I keep forgetting the White Sox are not the team that's on top. The Twins are always just kind of there, and they're not doing anything special, especially lately. They're terrible. But the Guardians, a win differential, finally jump back in the positives. They're +5. But we are at unofficially the midpoint. What is it? They've played 90 games, which is way less than everybody else. I guess they probably caught up now because doubleheaders, but it seems like they've played so many fewer games.
I think they have two fewer games played, I think, than the Twins specifically, which is
but they've got another doubleheader coming up, like right out of the All-Star break, and then another one for the game canceled on Sunday.
Hell yeah. More doubleheaders.
But through the first half, they have obviously three All-Stars: Jose Ramirez, Andrés Giménez, and Emmanuel Clase. I think two of those is probably expected, Ramirez and Clase, but Giménez, I think, has easily been the biggest surprise of the first half, unless you count Well, I don't know. I think the biggest surprise has been every rookie coming up and being great immediately. Like, I'm not used to that in Cleveland.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, actually.
Some have faded pretty quick, like Owen Miller. I think Stephen Kwan bounced back, but he faded right away.
Well, that's the thing. I look at these guys, and I'm like, when's the other foot going to drop? What's going on here? Like, Oscar Gonzalez is the most nerve-wracking player on earth, simply because I'm like, how is he doing this? Stop it.
Yeah, that foot's going to drop hard, but it's fun while it doesn't, yeah.
Oh, 100%. It's been very...
Although now maybe it won't even have a chance to, because if Nolan Jones, if he keeps doing this, and like, you know, he's probably a better player than Oscar Gonzalez. I don't know if you... Which is sad, because I like Oscar Gonzalez, but I think you just keep Nolan Jones there in right field.
I mean, Gonzalez seems like a real sweetie, but Nolan Jones is taking walks. He has 6. So Oscar Gonzalez is none in 1/3 the games. So, you know.
Jones already has a monster home run.
He absolute tape measure shot. You know what's interesting about him? The more I watch him, his bat seems small. Doesn't it seem like he has a use it?
It does. I think he's just huge, but I think he does have kind of a smaller bat.
It's kind of strange, but I think, you know, obviously a lot of delightful surprises. Naylor finally turning into the power hitter we'd hope he'd be, and not just like a basically league average bat. And all being real, too. Like, you look at all his like peripherals, and you're like, this is sick.
Yeah, Josh Naylor, 62 games, 133 WRC plus. Like, he is sneakily amazing this year.
He's been excellent. Yeah. I mean, we're splitting hairs at this point, but him and Naylor have the exact same OPS, or him and Jimenez basically have the exact same OPS. Obviously, they got about it in different ways, but the fact that they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I don't know. That's actually Gonzalez. They got 5 guys with a positive OPS plus, which is good, and then Nolan Jones as well, which is nice. They got to do something about Austin Hedges. That's still bad. They got to do something about Franmil Reyes. That's still bad. Miles Straw, kind of stuck with him for a while, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, I think Miles Straw, he plays well enough defense. Like, even if he stays at like 70, 75 WRC plus, I think he plays well enough center field that you keep him.
That worm has to turn, though. I mean, I just think he's been unlucky.
Yeah, I don't think he will be that bad forever. But I
don't think anything more than like a 95 to 100 is what we can hope for.
And if he's that's an outstanding center fielder.
That's the thing. He's still going to be a 2.5 win player this year. Like, for all the kvetching and complaining about it we've had, like, he's still going to be a valuable player, like someone who helped a team win. So
yeah, remember when he climbed that fence too to yell at somebody? What was he
yelling
at? Stephen Kwan? We forgot about that real quick, didn't we? The fact that if you want a guy who's going to defend your teammate, just know he's going to jump on the fence. I'm sure everybody loves Miles Straw after that. So I thought it was wild that people were ready to DFA him after a slow stretch. Like, he's been fine recently, and there's no way they're going to DFA him or option him or anything. He's around. He can hit poorly on offense for a while and make it up on defense. And he still walked a bunch, too. He doesn't strike out a lot. It's just the hits were not going where they were supposed to. And
that's the thing. I mean, it's a bad luck thing. Like, I don't think he's hitting the ball if anything, he's hitting the ball harder than he ever has, almost. He has the second highest average exit velocity of his career, second highest hard hit rate. He just has a BABIP that's 52 points lower than his career average, and an isolated slugging that's 20 points lower than we were expecting. So he's digging it out. I mean, obviously it sucks to watch. I don't think he'll be as good as he maybe was last season with Cleveland, but I think he'll still be fine. He's trying to go opposite field a lot more, which is strange. His ground ball rate is really high, so I don't know. Maybe he's just trying to figure things out, but...
Yeah, I do like having the way they have it set up now with Stephen Kwan as leadoff and Miles Straw in the ninth. Like, if they're comfortable with that, I'd be fine keeping it like that. Kwan is going to get on base a lot more than Straw, and Straw's fast. He can be down there. You probably don't want Straw getting more at bats than everybody else if he's bad, but if he's going to be hitting quote unquote in front of the top of the lineup, so
no, it's perfect. I think down there. Yeah, I think it's a perfectly set up thing. And then, you know, obviously, like you mentioned, they're 2 games out. I think it's gonna be a 3-team race all year.
Sure.
Circling around to the White Sox. That Dylan Cease sure is turning into a problem.
He's taken the place of Lucas Giolito, who is no longer an issue.
Lucas Giolito was never this good, though.
It's true.
Like, Lucas Giolito was as good as Michael Kopech is this year. And Dylan Cease is... He was always, like, throwing gas, but he couldn't find the zone. And now it's just like, this is bad. This is bad news. This guy is an absolute just... doomsayer.
That mustache gave him the perfect it like tuned his mechanics just right, and now he's nailing it every time. It's
scary. Why did they get Johnny Cueto? What? Wait a minute.
What?
Johnny Cueto is on the White Sox. I just found that out just now. So there you go.
Breaking news. Johnny Cueto on the team he's been on all year.
I don't know. I just never picked up on it. Am I thinking of someone else? Maybe I'm thinking of someone else.
I don't know.
Anyway.
First half stuff. Amed Rosario, probably going to be traded, but he's looked really good since the beginning of June.
Even how good
he's been, his WRC plus is still 107. So it's not like he's on the whole season. He's this amazing, unbelievable hitter. I think they're going to trade him, and I'm okay with it.
I mean, that's the thing. Like he's so ebbs and flows. I mean, if you're going to trade him, now's the right time because he's hot at least, and you could look at the 109 OPS plus and 106 WRC plus. What's his RBAT plus? Let's find out.
Hold on. Can you get it?
Yeah, it's 108.
Thank you.
So there we go. So what's the difference?
The perfect stat.
I love it. I love it to death. But yeah, I think he's definitely someone they should move for a good reason. Obviously, he's your best shortstop at this point isn't playing shortstop. Moving Jimenez to shortstop would free up second for any number of middle infielders.
Although, I mean, do you leave Jimenez at second? Like, he's played a lot of it. He's been really good at it. Is there something about him that specifically makes him a better shortstop than, like, I think Tyler Freeman's really good defensively. I think Brian Rocchio is probably better than he is defensively.
I guess this thing about this year, maybe. I guess I'm thinking of it in comparison to Rosario. His range is better.
Which Stone hands Rosario is not going to get it done.
There you go.
I mean, he's better than everything compared to Rosario.
Exactly. So it's, I guess, it's based on what the big league team has. And then just for now, too, then they could move Miller to second. Continue to give him regular playing time to see if he can work out these kinks and turn into a better hitter. And then, of course, that gives more time for Naylor to play. Naylor and Reyes to kind of piggyback on first, just kind of keep them both off the field but on the field in a sense.
Although, I mean, another first half-ish thing is that Framil Reyes, they might talk about trading because they don't want to move positions. Like, that frees up Josh Naylor to just be your DH, and you either have Owen Miller stay at first or Nolan Jones, like, shift him to first. He seems like a natural. Again, I just think he always looks like Jim Thome so much to me that I imagine him at first base so easily. It's the neck. That is a Jim Thome ass neck. He's going to grow exactly like Thome did.
It's the back of the neck into the head. It just makes him look like he's got
that
a huge
one specific
head.
Spot. Just zoom in right on that, and you're going to see Jim Thome. Yeah.
Well, there's something. I mean, I'll say this, and this isn't based in literally anything, but I just feel like Naylor being a first baseman is like key to his existence. Like,
you don't see him as a good DH?
I mean, I'm sure he'd be fine, but there's something about having a guy on the field and at the plate, just being a total demon, just being a psychopath all the time.
Firing everybody up from first base.
Right, so. Like having that energy on the field, I think, is just one of those ineffable things that you just can't really quantify or judge, but it's like, yeah, this rules. Being, like you said, the energizer bunny, basically, for the whole team. And like whatever, you know, it's not like it's a defensively demanding position. I'm sure he won't hurt himself again, so that'd be positive.
Well,
we've
seen it. I maybe he will, but
I think he did hurt his chest the other day just swinging. So I would like for him to, you know, get in a little bit of better shape.
That'll come, I think, when his leg is better.
Because
he basically just dropped right in from being injured to playing. Like, I think in the offseason, we're not going to do bold predictions for next year, but mine is going to be that he's going to be the first best shape of his life. Report in 2023.
Oh, 100%. Yes.
Because he's going to be going absolutely insane in the offseason to continue whatever he's done. Yeah.
He'll be doing, what's that?
Even if he doesn't, I think he's fine. Like, these injuries just seem random. It doesn't seem related to his weight necessarily. It's just last year was he collided with Ernie Clement.
That one, yeah. But it seems like he's had a couple, like, weird, like, soft tissue injuries this year, which is a issue of training, and like not bad ones, but like whenever he like hurts his back or like strains his chest or whatever, that's all.
Yeah, but that could also just be not having spring training and all that, just again being dropped in when freaking Ernie Clement, man, it's all his fault. Which, by the way, he has not played in a long time. That was kind of a Nolan Jones thing to mention, that it got rained out, but the Guardians were going to play a lefty on Sunday. And that was the biggest thing I was holding my breath about for Nolan Jones. Like, are they going to actually start him against a lefty? Do they finally trust him like this? And they were. They weren't putting, like, Alex Call or, God forbid, Ernie Clement out there in the outfield. It was Nolan Jones who's going to start against a lefty, which I think it's really good for the team, because I think Nolan Jones is not one of their best hitters, but he's on the road to being a really good hitter. And I think it's good for Nolan Jones to let him hit out there against lefties, which is pretty cool they're going to do that.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's vital to his own growth. And I think a good thing about this, especially if they could trade a Rosario, just to kind of give more space in the field for, is it just none of the other prospects, I don't think, are beating down the door now. Like, a lot of them are probably going to be next year kind of guys.
Yeah. And the only one that kind of is, Will Brennan is an outfielder, so he's not going
to
be.
Well, I guess it's just in general, I'm just trying to say is that now is the time to give Jones, let him take his lumps and feel out what the league is like. Let them adjust him so he can adjust, or even let them adjust to him so he has a bad finish to the year, but he can use that as motivation. And just, I'm not going to overly tout the guy, but the new hitting coach, you know, I think he definitely has had a positive impact for some of the guys who've been there. You know, I mean, obviously Miller is not having a barn burner season, but he's miles better than he was a year ago, and he looks way more confident out there. And then who else was the other one? I think it was
everybody. That's coming up, like Stephen Kwan.
Owen Jimenez is way better. Kwan really has figured things out.
I don't know how many of these can be coincidences before we just.
I'm saying, man, like it's there's something here. There's something here. So.
Andres Jimenez has a huge leap forward. I think part of that was maybe showing last year, like just in his change of swing, but
yeah. But it was going to take some time to kind of we figure out how young he is. Like, he is just so dazzlingly young. There's so many young guys on this team. It's ridiculous. You got to get rid of this old man, Austin Hedges. Old man, old man.
He will find you. I've seen those. I've looked in those eyes. Don't mess with him. I mean, Bo Naylor, too. Like, he's going to be coming for that soon. So
I wonder if he'll be a catcher.
Bo Naylor? Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Well, you know, Carlos Santana was a catcher. He was bad at it. So, you know, Mitch Martinez was a catcher. Was
everybody can be a catcher, yeah. I don't think they'll ever have a catcher that bad again. I could
die, but, you know, I mean, it's easy to stay back there.
I think if he's still there in AAA, I think at this point they're either desperate to make it work or they believe he's good enough to.
Yeah, no,
even if he can't frame or whatever and he doesn't have as good of a stop, like maybe he's just good at managing a rotation, which can't really know until he's up here. But
yeah. Maybe they're expecting the robot umps to happen sooner rather than later, which means that framing is out the window.
Yeah, that's actually kind of. Do they have others that like aren't great framers? I don't think. I think they're all still really good defensive, but like that's a good. If they're planning ahead for that, then I mean, who cares? As long as you are athletic enough to stop the ball and you manage your pitching staff, you don't need to frame. Which is kind of sad.
Blocking and calling a game at that point is what you need. Like, you know, being able to like, who was it? Oh yeah, Perez. Roberto Perez is just such a dazzling brick wall back there. Same thing with like Salvador Perez. Same idea. Just absolutely just nothing gets by them. I seeing that kind of catcher plays is awesome to me. I love it. So
I mean, Austin Hedges is too, but good Lord, is he bad offensively? Like, there is a line, and I think he is under it.
Yeah, I really feel like we've just been like plumbing the depths of the all defense, no hit like catcher since 2015, I think. Was like
since that one year that Yan Gomes is really good offensively. Yeah. It's been
how low can we go? Oh, way lower. Don't worry, we're getting there. we're digging a pit. Oh,
get in, loser. We're going down.
What's that? No hits until July, and if anybody gets a hit, it gets thrown out at second or switched to a double because he's slow as molasses. God, that was the best.
Oh, was that? That was Roberto, right?
That was Perez. Yeah, I was in attendance for that hit. It was up in Baltimore, and I was like. God. So my wife was like, "What are you laughing about so much?" I was like, "That was his first hit of the year." He just got thrown out
as he chugged around second base.
Oh, God, Roberto, he's so dude. Watching that man run, it's like watching someone underwater with bricks on their feet. Oh my God!
And he was good in Pittsburgh before I got hurt this year too.
Yeah, he was starting off having a nice little season. He got hurt. It's too bad. I love him.
So looking ahead, it's enough looking back. We've got a whole half a season coming up. Figure at least two things we can answer to kind of get a grip on what's coming up for the Guardians. The first one, what are you looking forward to most in the second half for? I could just say team, organization, I guess anything. Like, what are you looking forward to for the Guardians?
I think a couple things. I'm excited to watch specifically Josh Naylor continue to grow as a player. He's still a flawed hitter, I think. He still has some issues. I don't think he walks enough, but I just feel like he's getting better and better as we watch him. Like, working counts more, hitting the ball harder, hitting the ball in places in the zone where it doesn't make any sense how he was able to connect on that one. And just seeing the growth. And other guys will be fun, too, guys like Jimenez. But I just feel like Naylor, more than anything, is really the bellwether of this team, just to see how his offensive approach and how his offensive kind of output kind of grows. Because he's made a leap. Right, obviously changing the way he hits the ball, 44% ground balls now, the lowest of his entire career, fly ball rate way up, strikeout rate, you know, higher than it's ever been, but who cares? Walk rate, though, again, highest of his career of any real note. 2019, I think he had, just had a cup of coffee there. 94 games, so okay. But watching him in general, and then I think just honestly, man, this race down the stretch is going to be very interesting. Just between them, the Twins, and the White Sox. Three teams, none of which really have the... I mean, maybe the White Sox are supposed to.
They're
really
various levels of disaster, basically.
Right, exactly. Like, they're all just incredibly flawed teams. The Twins' pitching is surprising at how bad it is, considering they have 50 wins. But, and then, you know, the White Sox are just... Like, again, I was just looking at their stats, and like, they have some great players. It's wild to me that they're as bad as they are. Like, Abreu's having one of his best years of his career. Tim Anderson is typically great. Luis Robert is, I swear to God, he was hitting 215 a couple weeks back. He's hitting 301 now. Andrew Vaughn can hit. And then their pitching staff is great. I mentioned deceased before. Obviously, what's his name? Has been having a bad year. So Jimenez. I guess because he is still dead. I don't know. Let's not make that joke. It's more. That's so funny. Who am I kidding?
to clarify, that was when he had. It wasn't minor, but it was. What was it like?
He tore his pec, I think, or maybe his hip or something like that.
Jersey, yeah, like they're memorializing him and opening.
Yeah, it was hilarious.
It was a little over the top, but
it was kind of funny. Yeah. But I don't know. Again, this is still the latter half of a rebuild for Cleveland, and the fact that they're competing for a division against a team that is supposed to be a World Series contender, and then another team that just spent a lot of money on specifically Carlos Correa. Like, it's very interesting that Carlos Correa is making like $33 million a year or something like that. He's the highest paid player maybe in the entire division. Actually, that'd be Miguel Cabrera. But again, he's a great player, and this team is still just has so many weird flaws to it. Byron Buxton is having a great year. That's very good. It's good to see that. But their pitching, again, is toilet time. So I think that's the thing I'm excited for, is just to watch Naylor's continued growth throughout the rest of the year. I hope they can find time to give him a break every now and then, because he seems like he gets run down pretty quickly. Again, I think it's because he's just bouncing back from a year off, just kind of parachuted into any spring training. Maybe this week off will be good for him, so he can be an all-star next year. I think it's going to be a great little run. Honestly, I think the White Sox might take the division ultimately. There's just so much talent there that they'll be able to get out of their own way eventually. But I think
we were starting to see that, I think, at the end of the first half. I mean, we're going to run into them coming out of the break too, so we'll know pretty quickly, like, if they've bounced back and can basically get over their manager and overcome who's
basically leading. They were 8-12 in April, and then they went 15-12, then 12-15. So they were 4 games under .500 coming into July, then they went 11-7 to get back to .500. So maybe they go 7-11 the rest of the way, the rest of the month, or something like that. I don't know. Maybe they just can't figure it all out. They 19-25 at home. My God, they just, I don't know. That'll be a very interesting one to see how it all plays out. They beat up on Cleveland this year. I'm sorry, they've been beaten up by Cleveland. They're 3-6. Okay.
Yeah, Cleveland's it's weird because the Tigers beat up on Cleveland and Cleveland beat up in Chicago.
Oh, also, the one last thing I'm excited to do is watch more Minnesota Twins games when they play the Guardians and watch the Twins feed because, what's his name, their announcer. Because
they absolutely melt, yeah.
They are just sick of the Cleveland Guardians stuff, so, yeah. Yeah, I think it'll be a fun year, though. It'll be a fun run down to the end here.
Yeah.
You? So what are your thoughts? What are you looking forward to?
I have two as well. I'm going to start the wider one and then the more narrow one. The one sort of related to the race down the road is, I'm just interested to see which direction the Guardians go at the deadline. Not even necessarily what trades they make. Cause I mean, they are, like we said, 2 games above .500. They could be in the middle of a race. They could also be one series away from basically being out of it. And the trade deadline is like 2 weeks away. So I'm just curious to see like what their deadline means for how the front office views where the team is. Like if they package some prospects and go get somebody, or if they just do kind of boring bullpen acquisitions. Or
that will happen.
If they trade, I mean, like Franmil Reyes or Amed Rosario, does that mean they think they're still in a rebuild? It's just, I'm interested to see where the front office sees where this team is. Because you could really, they're such a flat record-wise team, and they're +5 run differential, so not like they're wildly one way or the other. Like, you could make any kind of interpretation of this team you want. Like, they're either too young to do anything, they're young and hungry, that means they're going to be good. This team is just impossible to read at this point, and that's part of the fun of the season, is I say fun, but also partially miserable. When they're good, it's fun. When they're bad, it's really bad. But there's been a lot of fun, weird parts about the season. I think we're going to see in the next couple of weeks where the team is really valued as far as what the front office thinks they're going to be doing. And the other one for me is Shane Bieber, just watching him evolve into whatever the hell he is now. Because obviously the fastball doesn't work the way it does. As we talked about, his slider is about to overtake that fastball. I just want to see. I think there's still some dominant innings left in Shane Bieber. He's obviously still super young. Maybe this is the time. I don't know if he would accept an extension now because it'd probably be a lot less. But if you could, I would extend him now because I think he's going to work this slider thing and still be a pretty damn good pitcher. Maybe not a Cy Young winning pitcher anymore. But like right now, even as a 3.24 ERA, he's still an extremely good pitcher. And I think he's going to make it work with the strike, with the slider the way it is now.
His feeling just being a guy pitching gets, is hella low too. It's like 277 or something like that. So he's been very effective. Like
yeah, it's fewer strikeouts, but way fewer walks is basically the trade-off for him. And way fewer home runs, too. Like, he's not giving up hard contact as much when he's on. He's also had some really awful games. But I think that's part of just figuring out the way to work his new pitches, which I hope he can.
Who would you want them to trade for? Let's say they decided to be buyers at the deadline. I'm sure they'll go both ways. You know, like, let's say they do.
Brian Reynolds.
Well, yeah, but besides him. I'm just kind of clicking through some other teams who are bad, who might want to trade someone. And, like, what about, like, Ketel Marte? I think he's, like, an interesting choice.
Did he just sign somewhere?
28. He signed through 2027 with the Diamondbacks. So, you know, that's a long contract, but it's also small. I wonder if with a team option, too. So you'd have him effectively through age 32 season, I think, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, obviously a catcher would be one, like Sean Murphy.
I'm trying to think of where they have space. You know what I mean? That's why I like Marte, because he kind of can play several different positions and things like that.
Yeah, I think the unfortunate answer is going to be it's a reliever. it's just two or three relievers that we've never heard of.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you look at their relief pitching, though, and it's excellent. Like, they obviously, outside of Shaw, I think that, I'll say, Morgan, Stephan, Henches, like, they're all good, I think. Henches, I think, has had a rocky couple of outings recently, which was not a lot of fun.
Yeah, Morgan
got, like, straight up De La Santos, Sandlin. Yeah. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it'll be sadly a reliever or an offensive catcher if they go that way. I don't think they'll go for even like Sean Murphy. And it'd probably be too much capital to keep him for 2 years. Or no, he's not free agent until 2026. Like, if they believe in Bo Naylor, I don't think they trade a ton to get him.
Oh, and that's the thing. I'm sure every baseball team runs into this issue. How do you balance that kind of, you know what I mean? Like, just figuring out, like, we have all these prospects. They're not all going to pan out, but some of them will. Like, at this point, they have like 10 guys who, like, even being told are going to be good in the majors.
They're not all gonna, yeah.
I want two of them to be good. One of them, I mean, two would be amazing. Three would be earth shattering. Yeah, one would be great. So,
I mean, like, three is World Series range, right? Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean,
like, who did the Cubs, like, what were their ones prospects? Like Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryant, Javi Baez? Was that like
Javi
their
Baez, three? Castillo, I guess. Wellington Castillo. Yeah, because then they signed, they signed most of their outfield because it was Zobrist and Zobrist played second baseman also. But even then, you look at like the Royals when they won their stupid World Series of stupidity. You know, that was, but I mean, that was most of the guys they drafted: Perez and Escobar and Moustakas and Hosmer and.
But still, Kane. It's not like three came out of the farm system were absolute stars. Like, I guess Eric Hosmer, if you call him a star for that 1 year, but
yeah. So what? Kane's, Perez, and
Hosmer. And Moustakas. So I guess they had four, and then Eric Hosmer probably
really
isn't that bright of a star.
We're really being generous with the word star right now, aren't we? Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, it's the three that come out of your farm system, like, among all these guys who were going to be great. But I think, like, three, you're probably going to get a World Series out of it.
Or I guess looking at, like, the Astros would be a good example as well. And that's the thing. Cleveland has not gone to the toilet to come back and build a World Series team. And obviously the Astros were cheating for this entire time.
That kind of helps them, yeah.
You get that roster. Tuve Correa, Bregman, Springer, Reddick? No, Reddick. No, not Reddick. Carlos Beltran's on that team? That's right. And then pitching-wise.
Jordan Alvarez came up after the World Series, I think, right? When they won.
What's that?
Jordan Alvarez came up after the World
yeah,
Series?
So he came, yeah, he came up in like 2018, 2019, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you look at their pitching, like, Davinsky, Giles they traded for, Gregerson, I think it was a production of theirs, Keuchel they produced, McCullers, Colin McHugh. So, you know, I mean, you four or five homegrown pseudo-stars and then two or three homegrown pitchers, seems like it can get you to a World Series. And right now they have Naylor, Jimenez, Ramirez.
I mean, they've got a bunch, yeah.
They need two more. Coming. They need two more. Like, and then we can start looking at something. And then you'll have Espino coming up.
You'll have all these pitchers. Like, it's going to...
We got Naylor. Or not Naylor. We got Nolan Jones. So maybe he'll be good. I mean, honestly, I think if nothing else, imagine how much better they'd be if they didn't have just a black hole at catcher.
Yeah, that would tilt everything in.
They are really playing National League Baseball in a sense that they just don't have any anyone in one position. So,
yeah.
I think it'll be a fun second half. They're way more competitive than I thought they'd be this year, and I think they're only going to get better because we saw from Kwan. I think he's adjusted relatively to the adjustment, and. So the other guys, I think, will get better and better. Obviously, they need to figure out the pitching staff because Shane Bieber, McKenzie, and Cal Quantrill are all pretty good. And then Plesac is less so, and Aaron Savali is hurt, and Connor Pilkington is not it.
So, yeah. He's going to be a great reliever someday.
Yeah, we'll see.
So one last thing before we wrap it up. A bold prediction for the second half of the season.
A bold prediction.
Be bold. Predicting.
Is it a fun one to say that Josh Naylor will hit 30 home runs? I don't think he will, so that's very bold.
What does he got, like, what does he got right now?
13.
Yeah, 13. I don't think it's impossible. He missed a bunch of time. He's a big slugging boy. I think he can hit 30.
My bold prediction. The Cleveland Guardians will win the division.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, that's. I think it counts as bold, and it's exciting, because that would be a fun one.
And secondary to that, Cal Quantrill will finish the season with an ERA under 3.40.
Oh, shit. Is he the best? Is that the best on the team? Is there a third bold prediction that Cal Quantrill is the lowest ERA on the team?
It would not be him. No, McKenzie or Bieber will have a lower ERA than him.
Okay, gotcha.
I think we'll have three guys with ERAs under 3.40 at the end of the year. So
basically they're winning the division because pitching like caught up to the hitting.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and some other stuff too. I don't know. Who knows? I don't know. They trade Rosario, move Jimenez to second base. Miller settles in at second and hits another 25 doubles to come into 46 and two more home runs. There's 46 doubles and then 8 home runs. Yeah. What's your bold prediction?
So mine is slightly narrower and less exciting than that, but I think Gavin Williams throws a pitch in the majors this year.
Oh, fun. Okay. I like that.
Yeah. He's 22. He'll be 23 next week. He was a very polished college pitcher. He has absolutely dominated high A and double A, and the Guardians, they purposely don't send their pitchers to AAA all that often, the ones they really believe in, because it's a bandbox in Columbus. So he's looked amazing in 70 innings between the two levels. I think at some point, like even if it's just relief or if they give him a couple starts at the end of the year, I think we see Gavin Williams come up. This would be his first year in the organization, but I think he at least throws in the majors at some point, which would be a pretty amazing. I think he's already an amazing draft pick last year at 23rd overall. And I think we see him just get fast-tracked to the majors and be super good, because I think he's going to be really good. He's 6'6". He's a tall guy. Has an absolute rocket for a fireball or a fastball. So I'm excited to see him either way. Fangraphs lists his ETA as like 2025, so maybe I'm way off. But I think there's a chance that he could. I think that was before the season. I think he's been a lot better. Like he wasn't even on the overall top prospect list, and I would assume he probably is now because he's looked so good. And I think he's going to surprise some people and get up and throw at some point this year and then be, as part of my bold prediction, if that happens, I think he'll be a mainstay in the rotation as early as next year. But if he doesn't pitch this year, then obviously he won't be starting next year immediately. But yeah, I think Gavin Williams is going to...
I think that dovetails a little bit with what I was saying, because the pitching needs a solution. Savali's on the DL, IL, whatever. Pilkington is again... Please stop.
Zach, please act traded, perhaps, if Savali comes back and then they need room.
I forgot he's already 27. Jesus Christ. He's the same age as Shane Bieber. So, I mean, we're going to be seeing some names from down on the farm pitching. And I wouldn't be surprised if get like one of the reasons they keep on drafting guys in like non-prep pitchers like is because you can fast track them. You only have to do a couple minor adjustments because, I mean, you know, pitching, coaching, any coaching really in the college level is really good, probably better honestly than
I think pros. So than a lot of
I mean they get paid more, so I wouldn't be surprised at that at all. I mean, like I said, I think we're gonna be seeing a lot of names come through the rotation just to see if something hits. Probably see a little bit of that with a lineup too, especially if they make a couple moves here, but yeah, I wouldn't be surprised by that at all. bowled my ass. Sorry.
I think that was bold. A first year pitcher, 22 years old. I think that's pretty bold, but maybe not. I saw today, like, somebody pointed out that teams are probably seeing that on top of, yes, like, there's less risk in seeing a 22-year-old and drafting him as opposed to an 18-year-old. You're also basically just offloading the cost of training and all that and making the payer play for it by going to college, like, instead of bringing up through your minor league system. So I think that's partially probably what the Guardians are doing. But,
and you know what, too? Like, I know they talk about how in college, like, they throw so many pitches, but, like, they pitch once a week. They don't pitch that often. They pitch way less than they do in professional baseball. So,
which maybe that's better. Like, over 4 years, if you're pitching less in college, you've, like, honestly probably have better coaches in college than you do in, maybe not in the Guardians, but in some minor league organizations. The college coaches, like you said, they're paid more. They're using probably more analytics than most teams. So, and that's probably.
I would be willing to bet that the Guardians pitching staff would be pitching training staff, whatever, it would probably be in the low 20s among those in baseball. Just there's so many good, especially in the SEC and all.
You mean in college, right?
College, rather. Okay. I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, that sounds about fair. Like college pitching.
It's just good. Like they just don't. I mean, everywhere from Texas to Vanderbilt, obviously Tennessee and Alabama, I think is pretty good. Ole Miss, I think is making a huge leap now. Mississippi State, obviously Florida. Honestly, the entire SEC can just throw the hell out of the ball. ACC same way. Like Clemson's really good. Florida State has a bunch of just killers. Apparently their killers ate the Guardians number one draft pick alive.
And then the Guardians drafted one of them
this past year. So that was cool. But yeah, no, I'm excited to see how they turn this kid into gold.
Yeah. And on that note, I think we're probably going to wrap it for this week, Merritt. If you haven't already, follow us on Twitter at Cover the Corner. I'm Matt ROY. Merritt is at Merrill Lynch, like Merrill Lynch with
Merrill Lunch. Merrill Lunch.
Don't care if Merrill I got it wrong. Lunch. Merrill Lunch, like Merrill Lynch with lunch.
Nailed it. Second time.
Wherever you listen to podcasts, find Cover the Corner, obviously coverthecorner.com. Merritt, talk to you next week.
I'll be there.
Most of the time, we talk about tech in terms of a handful of gigantic companies, like Google, Meta, and Apple. But some of the most interesting stuff we find online is the product of a single person.
When you're working on your own, I think there's this beauty of being able to come up with an idea and then implement it then in that moment. You don't have to have permission from someone else. There's no red tape.
In the Vergecast series, Solo Acts, we'll get to know these people, the tech they use to get stuff done, and the obstacles they face trying to compete with the giants.
Some people that I talk to and my friends are like, your competitors are Zuckerberg and Musk. Like, aren't you kind of like afraid of that?
Every Monday, our friend Ashley Esqueda will be curating and hosting these interviews and sharing with us what she's learned.
I can't believe the McRib locator was originally a tornado locator.
Right.
Pretty wild.
Listen to our Solo Acts miniseries now in the Vergecast feed, anywhere you find podcasts.